This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. I'm Esme Joseph. This is Love, Life, and Everything in Between, a show that's about just that, a curious guide into the world of relationships. This evening, we'll be talking about flirting.
I don't even know how I would go about it.
Oh, well, what I do is I look a woman up and down and I say, hey, how you doing?
What are you drinking?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't hear you.
So you just laughed and said, yeah?
Yeah.
Excuse us.
Hi. I noticed your glass was getting a little low, so I took the liberty of bringing you another apple martini.
Thank you.
And I couldn't help but notice you look a lot like my next girlfriend.
What's your name?
Can I press your button?
I don't know. Can I press yours?
We can identify with what we've just heard. We know it when we see it, at parties, at the office, or just about anywhere people meet. So what exactly is flirting? Well, as a general definition, it's when a person behaves as though they're attracted to or trying to attract someone. And the key point here is that, rather than with serious intentions, it's for amusement. But the question is, why do people flirt?
We're talking about flirting today, Chuck.
Right.
From what I understand, flirting is technically considered a language, especially by evolutionary psychologists, behavioral psychologists,
right,
anthropologists, basically anybody with an ist at
right.
the end, just especially. And it's been pretty important to our survival as a species.
Right.
Okay.
In a sense.
And the reason it's so important for, you know, the evolution of the human race and actually just about every other animal race out there is we can figure out whether or not the reproduction will work before actually having sex. So essentially without flirting, either nothing would happen ever, right?
Uh-huh.
Or everything would happen all the time. Yeah. So we would have died out or there'd just be too many of us. And either
right.
way, we'd be screwed.
Right.
So flirting is a way of kind of leading up to the sex part and keeping us from jumping in bed with every single person to see if it works.
Right. Well, thank God for that.
Agreed. Flirting's kind of fun.
That was Chuck Bryan and Josh Clark. They are the hosts of a podcast called Stuff You Should Know. And they raise a couple of things. First, the importance of flirting, but also the way in which we flirt. So, to understand more about this essential part of human interaction and the art of flirting, I found some experts. But before we get their take, I'm going to take it to the ground and find out what the everyday Malaysian thinks about flirting.
Something that occurs before romance blossoms.
For me, flirting is the best part of a relationship. It is something special, and that's when you learn about that person and everything seems new to you.
It's part of the hunt if you are on the lookout for someone. It's also a way of knowing what your worth is if you happen to be in a relationship.
I guess everyone flirts in a different way. I think it's something that should come naturally, I guess.
Everyone has their own version of flirting. But is that truly the case? Does flirting have a defined meaning?
This is one of the problems, is that everyone thinks of it differently. In fact, in my book, The Flirt Interpreter, I interviewed 250 people from four different countries, and I asked all of them the first question, what is flirting? And they all had a different answer. Some people think it's, you know, a bit manipulative. Other people say it's a really fun way to pass the time, and everything in between.
That is Miss Jean Smith.
I am a social and cultural anthropologist, and that basically is a very long way of saying I study human behavior and I specialize in the areas of flirting and attraction.
Jean has dedicated her 15-year-long career to the study of human attraction. And she is making a name as one of Britain's leading experts in the field of flirting. Jean has conducted interviews with 250 people in four Western cities around the world. She also wrote a book, and it's called The Flirt Interpreter, Flirting Signs from Around the World. What was the experience like doing all those interviews? Did you have a unique experience in each place?
Well, it was very interesting because, just as a side note, it was also as interesting how people responded to the interview process. basically how socially fluid the culture was. So, for example, in New York, it's very socially fluid. I could just, in Central Park, walk around and say, hey, I'm doing some research. And as long as I fit my demographic sampling, I could just start asking them questions. Where in Stockholm, everything had to be pre-arranged with someone that they knew. I tried doing that same thing in Stockholm, and they just would turn bright red and kind of mumble something and run away.
So what did you discover in your research?
So some really interesting things came out of the book, and I realized the way that people in each city flirted depended on history, whether or not the society was religious, economics. There were so many different factors, and it really made me aware that flirting behavior is completely based on social conditioning, not on biology. And this was one of the reasons I went to Stockholm, because at the time, the United Nations Development Index rated Swedish women as having the least amount of inequality. There's no such thing as perfect equality, but least amount of inequality out of all the women in the world. And I thought, I wonder how this affects the flirting, if it even does. And basically, in a society where you have... It's not a religious society. Women have things like childcare and healthcare paid for by the government, and they make almost as much as men. Guess what happens? They make the same choices when it comes to flirting that men traditionally make. It's not at all based on biology. And so, for example, women would go out in groups with their friends, and guys would complain. Well, we try and talk to them, but they're like, we're with our friends now. Leave us alone. Or they would try and buy the girls a drink, and they'd be like, why? We have our own money. We don't need you to buy us drinks. So that was such an eye-opener. What happens when you have a different set of conditions?
Sure. Social conditioning may influence the way people flirt. But before that, what is it that makes a person a good flirt?
I teach flirting as just a way to make people feel better and just a more fun way to go throughout life. And in fact, my husband's become a much better flirt since being with me. I'm really proud of him. But I guess the thing was, I was kind of too adaptable when I was actually single and flirting. And this is one thing that people could actually take on board, is the best flirts are adaptable. They can adapt to different people and, oh, this person likes someone more intellectual, this person likes someone more fun, you know.
But if everyone has different interpretations of flirting, how can we differentiate if a person is being friendly or if they are flirting?
It is hard to know, especially a stranger, it's hard to know their intentions at first. So I think after a couple minutes, it's a little bit easier. But there are differences between friendly and flirting. And one of the main differences is eye contact and how it's used. So when people are flirting, first of all, they look at you more often. So it's frequency. It's length of time. They look at you for a longer period of time. Intensity. So it's the feeling behind the eyes. It's different from a friendly feeling, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And then finally, it's gesture. So is it accompanied with, you know, like touching the hair or like touching the neck or something like that? So that's usually how you know it's flirting. So in my research, I found that although there were differences in the cultures, there were six things that were the same. Six ways that people showed that they were flirting and understood when someone was flirting with them. And so I created the handy little acronym for you called HOT APE. And so the six signs, H is for humor. People like to laugh, and they like to be with people who make them laugh.
Okay.
O is for open body language. Now, this one is important because people don't often recognize how important body language is. First of all, it'll show you if someone's open to you approaching them. If they have their arms crossed or their shoulders are facing in towards their friends and they're not facing out and open like to the room, don't bother them. They're not interested. Also, if you're someone who knows that you cross your arms, stop doing that because it really blocks people. Basically, arm crossing is a barrier between you and everyone else. And then there's touch. So this is also culturally based too. Some cultures are more touchy than others, like the New Yorkers. Oh my God, they were touching everywhere. I mean, they were just so, yeah. But if you were at a certain stage with someone, I mean, not with a stranger, it could make it more powerful. Just like, you know, they say the safer places to touch is like top of the shoulder. And then the further you go down the arm towards the hand, the more intimate the touch is. So if you are, you know, starting to date someone, you know, a little tap on the hand as you give them a compliment, that I think that would be well received. And then A is for attention. So it's how much attention someone is paying you, especially in regards to everyone else. P is for proximity. So this is used in two ways. One, if the person that you've made eye contact with is first across the room, and then all of a sudden they're like near you, this is not a coincidence, people. They have purposely moved. And then the second way proximity is used is when you're in the conversation. Like as one of the London female interviewees said, look, they're in your personal space. You either mind or you don't, depending on if you like them. And by the way, all of these signs are used equally for men and women. So these are for everyone. Finally is eye contact. And this was the number one way people could tell when someone was flirting with them. And as I said earlier, the difference between friendly and flirting.
After this, we find out more from Jean about her observations on the way people flirt in Stockholm, New York, Paris, and London. This is Love, Life, and Everything in Between. I'm Esme Joseph, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. I'm Esme Joseph. This is Love, Life, and Everything in Between, a curious guide into the world of relationships. This evening, we are talking about flirting. I've been speaking to Jean Smith. She's making a name as one of Britain's leading experts in the field of flirting and attraction. Jean is also the author of The Flirt Interpreter, Flirting Signs from Around the World. She conducted interviews with 250 people in four Western cities. So that's London, New York, Stockholm, and Paris, just to find out how people flirt.
6:24 on day, mate. Flirting. Let's cut to the chase. Surveys are broken this down country by country. In Spain, the most successful line is, you have beautiful hair. That's what Spanish women want to hear.
In Russia, it's all about the nose. You have to praise that.
And in the USA, you should say you dress beautifully.
And here in the UK, the winner was, you have beautiful legs.
I strongly suspect that survey is a lot of nonsense, actually. So we have a social anthropologist here to tell us what is best.
Jean, now that we know what the signs are when a person is flirting with you, do different cultural backgrounds and societal norms influence the way people flirt in different places? Are there any similarities when it comes to the way people flirt?
It's interesting because they're actually not alike at all. And the main way they're different is New York is very straightforward. It's just what you see is what you get. It's also very assertive slash aggressive sometimes. People there are highly competitive in New York, okay? Now, in London, it's all about what you don't say. It's the subtleties. Being straightforward is just too much for the kind of shy and reserved Londoners. The Londoners were the only ones to say they would flirt to make people feel good. And actually, a lot of the men said they would flirt at work to just make things go along more smoothly. In their culture, it's part of a politeness.
Wow.
Yeah.
Flirting.
Yeah. You know, and it's part of making feel good. When you flirt with someone, you make them feel good. Mm. But on the other hand, they also have a real wariness towards flirting. For them, it's important to be genuine. And there was an idea that it might be manipulative.
And what about Paris and Stockholm?
It's interesting because I actually wrote my master's dissertation comparing the Parisian flirting and the Stockholm flirting. So in Paris, and one of the reasons why, because they're such opposites, in Paris, it's all about gender roles and the expectations. Like, it's pretty clear cut. If you're a male, you're going to do A, B, C, D, E, you know, and if you're a woman, you're going to do F, G, H, I, J. I mean, it's just, it's very clear. So, for example, one of the questions I asked, do you approach women? And I asked women, do you approach men? And in Paris, it's like, no, that's the man's job. And then in Stockholm, the most common answer for men and women to anything I asked was, well, the same as men. Well, the same as women. Both men and women said that. They're like, well, same things a man would like, same things a woman would like.
From what I understand, Londoners see flirting as a sign of politeness. New Yorkers see it as a competition. Parisians look at gender roles, and in Stockholm, it's all about equality. So where does that leave us?
So I'm just, you know, I'm just starting to check it out here, but I definitely think it's much more reserved. And I wonder if there's a less open attitude towards flirting here. Maybe there's that word brings a bad connotation, like all the worst parts of flirting, rather than all the best parts of flirting, which would be, you know, making people feel good, having fun. It's just, it's no big deal. It's just a preferred way to pass the time.
While Jean's findings on flirting styles and techniques were focused on what was familiar in the West, I wanted to find out how we do things in the East.
So I think we are more, I would say, polite or more careful in our approach. We are not open about flirting.
Out of the handful of guys that I met during my younger days before I got married, there were some outright sleazy ones who just wanted to get into your pants thinking that it was okay to say the things they said. And then there were those who were really trying but not having the art for it, but you've got to give them A for effort. And then you have the classy ones who probably have a lot of practice in it already, so they know exactly what to say, what to do, and how to make you feel comfortable.
Well, basically, the lack of effort in that pursuit of flirting with someone, you don't put too much effort into it, which kind of makes people question your sincerity.
David Tian is not only Asia's top dating coach, but he's also the executive director of the biggest dating academy in Asia, the Aura Dating Academy.
Masculinity for the intelligent man. I'm David Tian, PhD, and this is Man
Up! Aura Transformation Company has had customers numbering into the about 30,000 now. So we've touched the lives of directly 30,000. Our indirect email lists and various lists number into the millions now.
Based on your 10 years of experience in the field, how would you describe the dating culture in Asia? How do we compare to our Western counterparts?
The dating culture. Well, there's a big generational divide. So that's unusual for, I mean, that's special for Asia. What I mean by that is the parents, if I were to use U.S. sexual history, like sexual culture history, in the 1950s, in the U.S., there was Masters and Johnson. There was, before that, there was the Kinsey Report.
Incidentally, the Kinsey Reports are two books on human sexual behavior, published in the 40s and 50s. Kinsey was a zoologist at Indiana University and the founder of the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex, Gender, and Reproduction. It's also known as the Kinsey Institute.
And when those came out, it was a big deal. Like, to even think women could enjoy sex in the 1950s, that was controversial. Like, that they could actually enjoy it like a man could. So it, back then, it was so traditional that the thought was that women had to put up with sex in order to get the baby that they really loved and all this, right? So that was a big deal. And then, but that was in the 1950s. I think for that in Asia, the older generation, meaning 50 years old and over currently, right now, are like they're still in the 1950s U.S. They're very conservative attitudes around sex and sexuality. So they're your parents. They're going to be a 30-year-old guy listening to this. Your mom and dad probably have very conservative attitudes around sex, unless they've lived overseas in the West or something. But the young generation has been bred through the internet on MTV, Hollywood. If you're in your 20s, you might be on Snapchat. And that's just the actual platforms that you're on also date you in a way, right? Like they transform you and they change your psychology in subtle ways, in some not so subtle ways. So now we have Tinder and these sort of immediate dating apps with that are relatively anonymous, which create a whole separate type of freedom within that culture, like a hookup culture or something.
What are your thoughts on the flirting culture in Asia, or more specifically, Malaysians and Singaporeans?
I just came out of a four-day series of events where I found out that in Singapore, there are men who think that flirting is wrong, that it is in some way shameful. And that just shocked me, right? So I guess we're using the word in completely different ways. But then they wanted to learn how to do it. So there's a lot of shame around it. There's also guys who... in Singapore, quite common because they've imbibed their parents' values, but then they want the thing that MTV and Hollywood and shows them, that they want to learn how to have casual sex and have freedom of it, but they don't want to, they think casual sex is evil. So I'm thinking, wow, you want the thing that's evil, and no wonder you have this conflict within your psychology, and it's hush-hush, and you look so beaten down with, you know, with all this pressure of trying to become an evil person, trying to, you know, it's like telling somebody that eating a Krispy Kreme donut is evil in some way, so they do it surreptitiously, like on the sly. But if flirting simply means making somebody laugh, showing your interest in them at the same time, and making them feel good about themselves, I think it's a great thing, and that's what flirting to me is.
Why do Singaporean men view flirting as a shameful act? That's coming up after this. We're speaking to David Tian, executive director of the biggest dating academy in Asia, the Aura Dating Academy. We also heard from Jean Smith, a flirt expert. This is Love, Life, and Everything in Between. I'm Esme Joseph, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
Good evening, I'm Esme Joseph. This is Love, Life, and Everything in Between, a curious guide into the world of relationships. This evening, we are talking about flirting. Earlier, I spoke to David Tian, executive director of the biggest dating academy in Asia, the Aura Dating Academy, to find out about the flirting culture in Malaysia and Singapore. David, earlier you said that Singaporean men view dating as a shameful act. Do you happen to know the reason why?
Oh, because of their parents. And what their parents' generation is very conservative. And that goes back for thousands of years for the difference between the elite and the followers, right? So the people who are at the top of the heap of society, they live according to a different set of rules. And they see the world in a different way. So many of the values that are supposedly Asian are actually follower values. But they're not actually Asian values. They're not... I mean, that's the focus of my PhD program, and I just came out of a conference where we were doing Chinese philosophy at the top levels again. And it was a good reminder that all of the written records of Asian culture come from the elite, right? Because the peasants couldn't write, they couldn't leave a written record. So actually, all of the Asian philosophy is not saying anything at all like what are supposedly Asian values. But instead, what you hear are things like, don't speak up, you know, like fit in, subsume your own individual desires to the greater collective of the group. Those aren't actually really Asian values. Those are not espoused by any, they're not in Confucius, they're not in any of his followers, they're not in the Taoists. It's not in the Asian canon, but those are just follower values. So one of those follower values are, do not flirt with people of the opposite sex, because imagine you're the emperor and you had to command 100 million people. The thing you want them to do is be obedient and follow the rules. And you don't want them causing fights between each other and all of this, right? And one of the great ways to make sure they stay within the boundaries is to actually have values that reinforce that. And everything's orderly and we won't have any peasant rebellions, you know, and it'll be easy to govern them. But meanwhile, the top elite will flirt with whoever they want. And in fact, the emperor will just send people out to find people for his harem, find women for his harem. So he gets to pick and choose, but the peasant should not.
So what are some of the factors that contribute to a person being a good flirt?
Oh, right. Okay, so let's get down to the specifics, the brass tacks. A sense of humor. That's huge. And you can develop that. You can develop a sense of humor by going to improv, comedy classes, by just letting go of your inhibitions and stop worrying about so much about how other people perceive you and judge you. And also having more self-confidence, being aware more of who you are, what you stand for, what you're about, what you value. So a sense of humor. On top of that, a big problem for Asian guys is, or people raised in Asia, is being more easygoing. Right? Like just relax. It's not that big of a deal. Even if you make a big mistake and everyone laughs at you instead of with you, just laugh at yourself. Don't take yourself so seriously. It's not such a big deal. And then the more you relax, the more fun it will be to be around you.
So there's a big difference between body language and nonverbal communication. Body language is obviously what you're doing with your body, what it says. Nonverbal communication is your actions more so. For instance, is chivalry dead?
No.
No,
it's not dead.
It's not. What are some of the nice things people do that are actions that can that help?
Opening doors for us, helping us put on our coat. And I'm speaking from the ladies' point of view. We love that.
Absolutely.
So doing something that, that does take some sort of action.
Yeah, and you'll see, you know, when people talk about the body language, and yes, of course, it's the twirling of the hair to let them know you're interested and leaning forward and touches too. But if you don't follow that up with opening the door or helping them push in their chair.
How important is nonverbal communication when people flirt?
Studies after studies have shown that attraction and likability come largely through the nonverbals. That is your body language, your eye contact, which make up more than half of, account for more than half of attraction. And then the sound of your voice. And that's from the sound of the words. And then the communication, which is less than 10% of attraction, the actual words that are used make a difference. They can make a big difference. But they can only make a big difference when the body language, the presence, the eye contact, and the sound of the voice are already attractive. So that's universal, your body language, your eye contact, your facial expressions. Another big problem for many Asian men is the lack of a socialization around facial expressiveness. But all of those nonverbals are the way you can communicate. Flirting. Flirting is not just words. In fact, it's mostly not words. It's mostly these nonverbal communications.
Do Asian people specifically have any difficulties in this department?
Through communication. I think a big part of it still is language. And I think, especially the men, because they're less verbal. So in Aura Transformation, we have several days and several levels of courses and modules and online courses and live courses on conversation, different types of conversation. Just there's small talk conversation, there's networking conversations. We teach that. We teach flirting, different levels of flirting. The way you flirt at the beginning of a relationship will be different from 3 hours later after you've met her, will be different from the third date, will be different from a year in. They'll be similar but also different. And you have to evolve and develop your communication skills. Of course, humor is a big part of it, as well as emoting. So being able to form deep connections with people emotionally and knowing how to do that, the actual pathways and methods and strategies to do that. These are all important things to learn, and I think most people don't know how to do them. Either, you know, Asian or Western, male or female, we all have to learn these things.
We're speaking to David Tian, Executive Director of the biggest dating academy in Asia, the Aura Dating Academy. We also heard from Jean Smith, a flirt expert. When we come back, we learn some tips and tricks to help you get better at your flirting game. This is Love, Life, and Everything in Between. I'm Esme Joseph, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back, I'm Esme Joseph. This is Love, Life, and Everything in Between, a curious guide into the world of relationships. We've been focusing on the art of flirting. According to new research from four separate studies, men and women definitely go about flirting in different ways. Not only do they put it out there differently, but the cues they're looking for from one another aren't the same. The paper also points out that women have more at stake when it comes to flirting, because biologically, they're looking for something long-term that will result in offspring. David, do men and women in Asia flirt differently?
So there's a generational divide in Asia. There is a gender divide in Asia in flirting and dating and who's taking charge. The women's brains are more malleable in the social sphere. Like there's a lot of evidence around that all through the school system, all the way through to university and into the 30s. Women are just more verbally fluent than men are generally. So when it comes to flirting, they're just quicker. So they're going to throw out a witty comment. And they have to have a lot of patience for the average man in Asia to think of a comeback and stumble back, you know. So women can play with the flirting a lot faster. And I've seen them become more impatient now because there have been a lot more expats in Singapore especially who have been flirting because it's more of an open verbal society in the West, right? Like if you're waiting at the bus stop, it's normal to just talk to the person next to you about the weather or about whatever, right? So you're socialized already to talk to strangers and to be quicker in the reply and to be a little braver. I mean, it's not even bravery. It's just to have less of a filter socially when you want to start a conversation. So if you go to the bars and especially the clubs, but even the bars at 9 p.m. on a Friday night or something, you'll see the women will, you know, they'll do the stares, they'll do the looks, they'll do the nonverbal, you know, invitations to the guys that they're interested in. And then it's up to the guys to sort of crack, to break the ice. And but the women I've seen just, they don't wait so long anymore. You know, in 2008, I've seen the Singapore women just sort of sit there at their table, kind of looking over there, but not doing anything. But now they're going to be more, they might send a note over to the table. They might walk by the table and giggle. It depends on the age, right? If they're more mature, they might just stare, like sort of challenge the guy to come over. The expats there will just go for it as soon as they see it. And have a good time.
But with social media and the rise of dating apps, has flirting changed?
Somehow liking someone's picture on Instagram has become equivalent to walking up to them at a social event and starting a conversation. I have high hopes for our generation. And although e-flirting is great because you can like do it in your pajamas, hoo-yah, you also gotta play it cool because there is an equation that goes into this. Number of likes divided by the number of minutes between each like equals the number of strokes I want to do to your bosom. One like. Okay, like whatever, that could have been a mistake. Two likes. Okay, wait, maybe he thinks I'm cute. Three likes. Oh my god, he's totally gonna break up with his girlfriend for me. Four likes. I need to buy a new dress for
us. Jean, what are your thoughts on dating apps? When it comes to flirting?
Not a fan.
Why? Tell us why.
Because unfortunately, it makes us turn people, human beings, into objects.
Okay.
And it also makes us use criteria that in the real world would not be important. In the real world, you want to meet someone who you can laugh with, who's kind, who's generous, you know, who's a nice person. You can't measure these things on the dating app. All you can measure are superficial things. Mm. And people can, you know, misrepresent those superficial things as well. So I think it's a really bad way to meet someone.
There is a good side to dating apps, which is people feel less intimidated to make that first move.
Yeah, it's true. One of my clients, she was recently divorced and she hadn't dated in a while, and she said, "Jean, I know you don't like dating apps, but you know I'm on this one, and actually, it's been great for me because I'm practicing dating again." And she's like, "I know I'm not going to meet my partner on here, but it's just really great to get the confidence up to date again," which is fine. It's fine, but you know, I think you can also meet, if you use different skills, you can also meet people in the real world and get your confidence back up.
What are some of the challenges or risks when it comes to flirting with someone online?
Again, people can misrepresent themselves, not even intentionally, which they can also do. But for example, online or even when you're writing stuff, you have time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so someone could actually show a different part of themselves writing. Mm-hmm. And then when you meet in person, you're just like,
Technology is just too convenient nowadays. How do we work this into our everyday lives?
The thing is, you want to be somewhere where you have things in common with people, okay? That's where you're going to meet someone. And then the added bonus is you're in close proximity, so you bump into them a lot. In science, it's called the mere exposure effect, and it shows us that the more we run into someone, even a stranger whose face we've seen before, we prefer to a stranger's face we've never seen before. So repeat exposure creates liking, and it increases liking for someone. So you combine commonality, proximity, and then you're going to ask everyone a question. Like, it's not enough that you just are in those places, but you ask everyone one question without any expectation, because then you have to actually interact with people. My clients are like, I've been doing, because I make a list with them of the best places that they should go depending on their lifestyle. And they're like, okay, I've been doing these and I'm not meeting anyone. I say, well, what do you do once you're there? Oh, I sit in the corner and talk to my friend. I'm like, okay, so.
Yeah. All right. Can you share with us some of your tips and tricks when it comes to flirting?
Yeah. Okay. So I think, again, the point is you want to maximize the opportunities in your daily lives. Okay. So this means when you're at the gym, you see someone who looks interesting. You don't turn it into, oh my gosh, there's the most gorgeous woman I've ever seen. You know, that brings it a completely unrealistic expectation. It's like, okay, there's a person. The next thing you do is you have to be in their proximity in order to ask them a question. There are more natural places than others to actually do this. So, for example, when they're at the drinking fountain or if they're using the weights. So you then are near them. You're, you know, queuing up to get a drink, or you're also using the weights. And then you ask a question. And I don't want to say start a conversation. And I've changed the way I've phrased this over the years, because starting a conversation relies on the other person as well. And at this point, you only can control your own actions. You can't control what the stranger does, right? So the part you can control is you ask a question. And this is a skill. I want to reassure people, if you're not good at it, it's because you haven't practiced. Imagine when you first learned a language or learned an instrument. You weren't good at it then either, but you practice. So it's not like, oh, I'm someone who can't do this. No, it's you just don't do it, so you need to practice. Okay, so you ask, like, if it's weights, like, are you done using these? Or, oh, that was an interesting exercise. How do you do that one? Or, you know, you just, you talk about where you're at. Like, for example, the venue.
Okay.
Yeah. And you just ask a question. If they want to engage in conversation with you, then that's up to them. But you just do that a lot in the places where you have things in common with people and you're likely to see them again. That's the secret formula.
All right. Sounds pretty easy.
It is. It's totally easy. It's just our minds and the stuff our minds make up. That's what makes it hard.
When it comes to flirting, you still risk rejection. Everyone hates rejection. Is there an easy way to deal with it?
Yes, rejection is one of my favorite subjects because it holds people back, and it shouldn't. It's all about the way that we're currently viewing rejection. We need to change the viewpoint, and then rejection is not a problem. So there are two things I'd like to say about rejection. The first is, one of the problems is we go around, I describe it, with like holes in ourselves. And we approach strangers. We're like, oh, stranger, here's a hole. Can you fill it and make me feel pretty? Oh, here's a hole. Stranger, can you make me feel intelligent? Oh, stranger, fill this one. Make me feel interesting. And that's why rejection hurts so much, is because we are putting our self-value into the hands of strangers. And that's a recipe for disaster. So making yourself feel good, it's your responsibility, and it's called self-development, it's called looking after yourself. You know, it's work. It doesn't just come with a snap of the fingers, okay? Now, once you have that sorted out, again, the thing you can control for yourself, then when you approach people and it doesn't seem like it's a match, rather than, oh, I'm never going to find anyone, or, oh, no one likes me, or, oh, I should have never asked her that question, that was so stupid of me, all that is irrelevant. Instead, it's like, okay, that's not a good match for me. Okay, let's find someone else. You can be more objective about it. Stop making up things that are going to happen that actually aren't going to happen. It's just your mind. And just start trying it. And then you realize, oh my gosh, this is so easy. Why haven't I been doing this all along?
How important is body image when it comes to flirting?
Well, it's not as important as people actually think it is, because people like people who make them feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. You know? And so the way you're dressed is whatever. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's you know, good to make a first impression, but, you know, women are so busy worrying about what shoes they're wearing. Nobody cares. It's about, are you making him feel happy and unique and like he's special? I mean, how many times has someone who, you know, looks nice come up to you and then after a few minutes you're like, no, 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 no. Equally, it's the opposite. And if you don't, you know, someone might not look exactly the way that you imagine, but they could be a really great person. I mean, my husband used to wear fleeces. Do you know what those are? Neon colored.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, thank God he got rid of those. But now he is so stylish. I mean, he puts me to shame, and that's all him. I didn't, you know, you can't change anyone. They have to get there themselves. And that was nothing about me. He just decided to do that. I think women make this mistake, and I can say women way more than men, is that they think the person they meet is the final evolution of that person. Oh no, there's so much more. I mean, that's all superficial stuff that can totally be changed, but it's hard to change a person's inside. So that's the most important thing that counts. You can buy a new wardrobe. That's not a problem.
Next week on Love, Life, and Everything in Between, we explore love addiction. If you've missed any part of this program, be sure to head on to bfm.my and download the podcast. I'm Esme Joseph, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.